As an unlicensed doctor, we suggest a prescription for one of our shows. Sign up for our free podcast at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Fake Doctor's Orders. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand. It's a magazine you don't have to feel obligated to buy from your nephew's fundraiser. This is Sportsnet Magazine Live, free on your radio. Now. Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Saturday, it's Sportsnet Magazine Live on the Sportsnet Radio Network. I'm Ben Annis alongside John Grigg and Gary Mello. Lots to get to today. Raptors lose in Brooklyn yesterday. Wrapping up the regular season in the NBA, we will have our Hart Trophy, Calder Trophy, Executive of the Year, and Jack Adams Award picks in the NHL. Also, we'll get to Tiger Woods announcing that he will play in the Masters. And maybe touch on that, Josh Hamilton's story, which is all kinds of intriguing. We start with the Toronto Blue Jays, who lose yesterday 2-0 to the Cincinnati Reds in Montreal at the Big O. Just seconds ago, we have the opening day 25-man roster. No Ryan Goins. He will head to AAA Buffalo. So that means that mop-up man extraordinaire Liam Hendricks has made this team. He was out of options. It was between those two. We knew that for a couple of days. That's kind of a side story. And if the Blue Jays are really relying on their 25th man here the first couple of weeks of the season, they're probably in trouble. But let's start with yesterday's game at the Big O. It was exciting to see 45,000 fans, see an exhibition baseball game. It was exciting last year, exciting yesterday. The lasting moment for me, watching that game, looking at the highlights, I think that video is probably the most viewed on Sportsnet.ca this morning. Russell Martin Sr. playing the national anthems before the game, and Russell Martin Jr. getting through an anthem and three quarters before finally breaking down. I mean, if you're going to have meaningless games, to have a meaningful moment, John, in a meaningless game, that's kind of cool.
Yeah, it's a nice story. You know, there's a long history of Russell Martin Sr. And music in Montreal, and for him to come in and get that opportunity, and for his son to be there, and for everyone to see it, I think it's a nice story. It adds to the overall kind of mystique of baseball in Montreal, and you know, there are a lot of people out there who would like to see it come back. And maybe that's another reason why.
I mean, you've got Russell Martin, who already he signs with the Blue Jays. He comes with a lot of fanfare. He's another Canadian. The Blue Jays have the potential to start three everyday Canadians on this roster when Michael Saunders returns. So that's part of it. You're already, you know, amping up the Canadiana. Then you play this exhibition game in Montreal where Russell Martin speaks French. We know a big part of the signing of Russell Martin was engaging the French baseball fans. And then you bring in his dad, who plays the saxophone. And we know that Russell Martin's middle name is Coltrane. I don't know. It was just a cool moment for me, Gary. I guess that's kind of secondary to looking ahead to this Blue Jays season. So they've finalized the 25-man roster. Six rookies to start the season. Dalton Pompey is going to be the center fielder. Devin Travis did make the team as the second baseman. You've got those two rookies in the starting rotation. Shai Davidi had a piece about all the rookies and whether it bodes well for success of this team or not. What do you make of it? Should we be concerned that there are so many unproven pieces on this team to start the season?
I think it's definitely one of the bigger talking points this season, for sure. I mean, not only do you have six rookies, but they're in key positions. You know, you've got two positional players, two in the bullpen, two in the rotation. So they're going to be relying pretty heavily on these players to actually contribute. But it's exciting, though. I think as a Blue Jays fan, I think the city, you can kind of feel that buzz and that excitement that this is probably the biggest talking point heading into this season. It's odd because here we are, spring training wrapping up. You didn't hear a whole lot of talk about Jose Bautista this spring or Edwin Encarnacion or Jose Reyes. I mean, most of the talk surrounded around the rookies.
Yeah, it's a different vibe, right? And it gives everybody something to look forward to and be excited about. How can these kids perform? And if they do, what does that mean for the overall performance of the team? Because you're right, Gary, they're playing important roles, especially if they play them up to what everybody's expecting them to do.
Well, it's exciting. I get that. And there's intrigue, but I see it the other way a little bit, because everybody in Major League Baseball this time of year is excited about their young players. They're optimistic. The Houston Astros are optimistic. The Chicago Cubs think they're going to be in the World Series right now. So, I mean, you look around baseball, there's not one out of these 30 teams that's pessimistic about the start of the season. We really don't know much about what's going to go down with these rookies. Now, I know Sanchez had a little time in the major leagues last year out of the bullpen. We don't know what he's going to be like as a starter. We think we know. Daniel Norris, we think we know. Devin Travis, I have no idea. Dalton Pompey got a little bit of run in September. There are a lot of question marks for this team to start the season, Gary.
Sorry, it's just nicer to have the kids to be looking forward to instead of, you know, everybody's up in arms this time last year about Irvin Santana not coming to the Blue Jays, right? I mean, I'd much rather have the young guys and be able to, you know, wrap my arms around them than have to do it with, you know, retreads and older guys.
I mean, certainly. And then you look at what these young pitchers have shown so far. I mean, you know, you look at the bullpen kids, tossing high 90s. Mid to high 90s. That's something to get excited about.
How will you feel? Will you be as excited when Roberto Osuna gives up gives up the lead with a 3-run home run to Mark Teixeira on Wednesday at Yankee Stadium in the 7th inning? Will you be as excited then?
Well, I think I'll be a little bit more excited if Castro's closing it out a couple of victories to start off on the road. But yeah, you're right. It could go either way right now. And I think that's the excitement. And there's a bit of unpredictability with it. And I think that creates some buzz around the team. And, you know, you look at a couple of years ago, the expectations were so high, it was easy to get disappointed with the results. So it's a little different heading into this season where, you know, if they get out of the gate with a good start, I think that's a positive story.
And even it's more exciting when it's Castro or Osuna than when it's Steve Delabar, right? I mean, I'd rather see...
Right now it is, but if they're not winning, that's not exciting. It's all about wins.
No, I'm talking about, you know, I'm talking about getting excited right now coming out of the spring.
I mean, hype can only take
so much as it is. It's just like on a hockey team having a bunch of young high draft picks who, you know, fans can look forward to watching grow and get better and get excited about. It's a lot more fun to watch those guys than it is to watch people on the tail end of their careers, right?
So the Maple Leafs next year, if they've got William Nylander.
I knew you'd bring it back to the Leafs somehow.
And Dylan Strome. You're excited about that team, even though they're dead last.
Well, yes. It's more exciting than David Clarkson and David Booth.
All right, maybe that was a bad example. Yeah, it's clearly more exciting than that.
Like, I'm excited to watch these young Jays and see what they can do. I'm more excited to watch that than I am excited to watch older guys and who I'm pretty sure I know what they can do. That's what I'm talking about. There's just a buzz, like you were saying, Gary.
And you saw that last year with Marcus Stroman. I mean, I think there was, you know, you could have brought in a pitcher, like a veteran pitcher, that would have given you those same innings, the same type of results. But seeing Marcus Stroman, I think, gives you some excitement about what the future holds for the team.
Talking about buzz, though, and excitement and hype, you want to talk about hype and buzz and excitement. 2 years ago, maybe the most buzz and excitement surrounding a Blue Jays team in my generation, you know, going back to 92, 93. They made that deal with the Marlins. They made the Dickey deal. They had all this preseason hype of being the World Series, odds-on World Series favorites going into that season, fell flat on their face, had the 11-game winning streak that kind of got them back into it, which people kind of forget about that season. That was kind of a fun point. But ended up falling well below expectations. And that was with older guys. That wasn't with younger guys. But you're saying, John, that this is different than that because it is younger guys and we don't know, and it's a different type of hype.
I think there's something to be said for going all in like they did that year and creating buzz out of nothing, right? Because nobody was excited about the Blue Jays going into that winter. I just think for me, you know, it's a nice to have a nice mix of young and old and to have something to look forward to. You know, when the Dickies and Burleys are gone, you know, there's still other guys on this roster who we can see being on the roster in 5, 6, 7 years, right? That gives me something to hold on to and grasp and want to move forward with instead of banking on a bunch of 30-year-olds.
And I think there's something to be said, the fact that these guys are all homegrown. Like, these are all players that, you know, have come through the system. I think fans like kind of attaching themselves to those young prospects and watching them develop and growing with them. I think that says a lot.
That being said, it's going to be the 30-year-olds that make this team go, right? I mean, if they don't have Josh Donaldson, if they don't have Jose Bautista, if they don't have Edwin Encarnacion, if they don't have Russell Martin, Jose Reyes clicking, this team isn't going anywhere. So as excited as we want to be about young players, Dalton Pompey, Devin Travis, Daniel Norris, Aaron Sanchez, those guys become irrelevant if you've got a gaping hole in the middle of your lineup. The old guys make this team go, Gary.
No doubt. I mean, and this team will definitely be better defensively on the defensive end, but it's that offensive side of the ball where you need to be careful, because 1 through 5, they got as good a lineup as most teams in the majors. But after that, it's a steep drop-off. So you need those guys to perform, and you need them to remain healthy.
I guess the ultimate question is, are there too many question marks with this team? And yes, it all looks good, and spring training results, it's hard not to get swept up in them. But believe me, don't get swept up in them, because we've seen this year after year. You have spring training MVPs that fall flat on their face. Now, there's examples of guys who, and not every, you don't have to stink in spring training to be good in the regular season, but there is definitely a thing, you know, fool's gold can be had here in March and beginning of April. Is there such a thing as being too reliant on question marks, or is that just the nature of sports that you're going to have question marks no matter what?
I think it's the nature of baseball right now, especially. I mean, there's a lot of parity around both leagues. You look at the AL East, and you could make arguments that any team in that division can win 80 or 90 games this year, or, you know, could win 90 games or fall a little bit flat and win 80 games. Who it's going to be, not so sure right now. I think there's questions with every team, and it's going to come probably down to making tweaks and moves later in the season to fill those holes and get those extra few wins in August and September.
The question about this team going into this season, and the question and the biggest hole that we thought Alex Anthopoulos had to fill in the offseason was in the bullpen. And we were surprised that, at least I was, maybe I'm speaking for everybody here, but I think most people were surprised that Alex Anthopoulos didn't make more offseason moves to bolster that bullpen. And part of it was being priced out of the marketplace. I don't know if those relievers and Andrew Miller and David Robertson were worth the money they were given in the free agent market. But the fact remained, he didn't do anything and instead is going to rely on young arms. One guy who's like 20 months removed from having Tommy John surgery, 2 20-year-olds. Now, I'm not saying it's not going to work, but could we be looking back at this, Gary, in a couple of weeks when the Blue Jays, who, I mean, we know what it feels like to see a team blow leads late in the game. It can be soul-crushing. And for a young team like they have, can we be looking back and saying, you know what? Maybe you should have done something with that bullpen, or maybe Alex Anthopoulos will do something with that bullpen.
I mean, quite possibly. The impression we're under is he probably didn't have the financial flexibility to deal with it in the free agent market. But he still has a chip to play. I mean, a lot of people didn't expect Navarro to be here on this opening day roster. So should they be slow out of the gate, or should that be an area they're struggling in that bullpen? If the young guys don't step up and give them what they're looking for out of the bullpen, then he still has that card to play.
And then you end up with Josh Toole back on the roster. Oh, man.
Yes. Okay, that's actually one of the key developments out of this 25-man roster. It's not Liam Hendricks over Ryan Goins, as amped up or upset you as you want to be about that. It's not really going to matter, and it could be different in 2 weeks anyways. If Liam Hendricks isn't needed and they feel like they can slip him through waivers and bring Ryan Goins back up, because he will be on this team. He will play a factor on this team no matter what. But the bigger question mark for me, the beginning of spring training, was whether Russell Martin could catch the knuckleball. I thought he did a fine job, but then I kept hearing these little rumor kind of chirping in my ear about how Josh Toole, you need Josh Toole to catch the knuckleball. I saw Russell Martin in the one start that was on television that Dickey started on Sportsnet. Looked fine to me. Kept everything in front of him for the most part. Even Josh Toole doesn't catch every single knuckleball. Seemed to me like R.A. Dickey was kind of instrumental in wanting his binky. But the team said, tough luck. We spent a bunch of money on acquiring this catcher in the offseason. He's going to catch you. Our bench is much better with Josh Toole in AAA. Are you impressed that this team nutted up and made that call?
A little bit, yeah. excuse me. You know, the question would be is, you know, 13 wins, 200 innings, is that worth two roster spots, you know, with a 3.8 ERA? Because that's kind of what Dickey's going to give you, right? I mean, to me, it's not. And to me, you know, as we're talking about here, depth is the big issue on this team. And you can't afford to have a no-bat, you know, on your roster who plays once a week or less. And, you know, for me, you've got to have everybody you can has to be a contributor. And, you know, Josh Tolley doesn't do that except when he's behind the plate for, you know, seven innings every 5 days.
And let's face it, the Blue Jays have invested a lot in Russell Martin. I mean, that's a pretty decent contract to not have him catch all five of your starters.
Right.
I mean, Russell Martin would have to drop every knuckleball to justify not having him in that lineup, right? I mean, drop one or two here and there, that's fine.
Yeah.
But he'd have to be pretty terrible to not justify having him catching every day.
I saw him. He seemed fine. I mean, what do we want him to do here? Are you guys with me? Do you believe that this is all starting with Dickey in that it was all his idea to have Tolley on this roster, or was it the team that was really weighing the options there? And in a perfect world for them and Alex Anthopoulos, they'd be able to trade Deonor Navarro. Is that what this team wants? Is that still something that they will pursue early this season?
I don't think that's a perfect world. I don't think Josh Tolley on your roster is a perfect world just to catch Dickey. I think it was big of them to man up and say, sorry, bud, but, you know, not this time kind of thing. But, you know, for me, Deonor Navarro is somebody who can spell Martin behind the plate, which you're going to need. And, you know, it felt like every time I saw him play last year and he came up to bat when the Jays needed a hit, he got a hit. I mean, the numbers weren't awesome overall, but he's a clutch guy. And I like him back there. I like him as your backup catcher. He's an excellent backup catcher.
That he is. And I think a lot of what Navarro contributes to this team might be determined what happens with Edwin Encarnacion. If Edwin's playing at first base, then all of a sudden, do you want, you know, Justin Smoke as your DH? Probably not. And that's where Navarro can step in and get some at-bats. Although it looks like they're going to start with the season with Edwin at DH, and Smoke at first. And that, I mean, that helps him defensively and obviously offensively as well. But that might go a long way in determining what Navarro contributes to this lineup.
Anybody buying on Justin Smoke as an everyday player in the major leagues? I don't even know if he'll be asked to play every day. Probably won't play against lefties. It'll probably be Danny Valencia at first base against lefties. But are we buying in a guy who has shown 20 home run power at least? And in Seattle, moving to Rogers Center, Gary, is that a guy you think who used to be, you know, the top power hitting prospect in all of baseball with the Texas Rangers? Not quite that anymore. But are you buying on his potential to do something offensively for this team?
I mean, offensively, I don't think he has to be spectacular because he is an upgrade defensively at first base. You know, we've talked about that left side of that infield kind of not always being able to hit the target when they're throwing a first base. So having Justin Smoke there is a huge help. And it also takes some of the pressure off Edwin Encarnacion. You know, there's very few guys in this lineup that they can't replace should a player go down. Edwin is one of those guys. He's a tough bat to replace in your lineup. He changes the entire makeup in the meat of that order. So if you have him at DH and Justin at first base, I think you're gaining a lot more offensively than you know, risking the possibility of losing Edwin for an extended period of time.
Yeah, I mean, if Smoke can hit 250 and, you know, knock a few out of the park, but play, you know, plus defense, that's what you want out of him for sure.
Is this lineup not deep enough? Because, yes, I know, I'm with you. 1-5, it's a monster. Maybe 1-6 if you want to go, and especially against lefties. I mean, this team should murder lefties because they've got lefty mashers on the bench. Say whatever you will about Steve Tolleson, he can hit a lefty. Same with Danny Valencia. But beyond that, there's the question marks of rookies and Devin Travis and Dalton Pompey and maybe Ryan Goins at some point and I don't know, Kevin Pillar still. I have question marks again for him. Offensively, I know he's a great defender. Even Michael Saunders, when he's up with this team, I have question marks. Is this lineup not deep enough, 1-9, John, or is it just 1-5 too good?
Well, I mean, you have to be healthy. That's the bottom line for sure, all year long. I think 1-9, if it's this 9, you're okay because of your top 5. I mean, for me, the depth issues are with the rotation. I mean, who are your 6 and 7 starters?
Johan Santana.
Well, great. Isn't that great? But you're going to need those guys. And I don't know where they are right now and who they are going to be.
It's true. They were so healthy in the rotation last year. They only needed, I think, 6 starters.
Yeah. I mean, you're not going to see that again, right? It's just, it doesn't happen that way in the majors these days. So that's going to be where you're really, really tested is who can step up and, you know, just pitch adequately every fifth day. And, you know, we'll have to find out. And but I don't know who that person is.
It might have to be Estrada. They might have to pull Estrada out of the bullpen if they need that sixth starter.
Which is a scary proposition because he gave up all the home runs in the National League a year ago with the Milwaukee Brewers. You know who's an interesting guy and who Stephen Brunt was talking about on primetime last week? Kind of the forgotten man, although maybe not forgotten because his name did come up in the Dan Duquette conversations with the Baltimore Orioles, is Jeff Hoffman, first-round pick by the Toronto Blue Jays, who apparently is throwing now in Florida and could be a factor for this team, coming off Tommy John surgery as well, and apparently just lights out touching 98, 99. He could be an interesting addition. You look at the young pitchers this team can throw at you the next few years when they get Marcus Stroman back, when you've got Hoffman and you hope that Norris and Sanchez can do something. Maybe kind of an underrated aspect of this team. And, you know, I think it was Jeff Blair that even pontificated last week that even if this team doesn't make the playoffs, Alex Anthopoulos should get credit for his draft record. Is it fair to say that he's fired if this team doesn't make the playoffs? Or is there a scenario where they keep him around because of the young pitchers that are coming through the system?
I mean, a new president is coming in, and he's going to want to put his own guys in place. I mean, that's the long and the short of it. I mean, if they win the World Series, it's hard to fire your GM, right?
You got him winning the World Series?
No, I said if, and you know what I'm saying. But, I mean, it's all going to come down to who the new guy wants. And I think you're right. You should give credit to AA for the draft record and for, you know, some of the, you know, waiver pickups along the way that have worked out. I mean, but... You know, you can also look at it and say he's being gun-shy during the season to add pieces when necessary and where needed. And, you know, maybe that's cost the Jays in the past few years, especially when you look back at 2013. But no, I mean, for me, it's who does a new guy want? And that he's going to have his man.
I agree. I mean, I think, you know, Alex's future has always been tied in with Paul Beason. I didn't think Paul Beason would fire Alex, and now we know this is Beason's last season with the Blue Jays, or at least in this role.
Yeah.
So when the new guy comes in, he's going to have to evaluate what happens this season. And I don't necessarily think missing the playoffs means Alex is done. I think a key part of his future will be what happens with these young players. If we see progression from these six rookies and any more rookies that join the team throughout the season, I think that will go a long way in determining Alex's future with whoever comes in as a new president.
But what happens if Donaldson sucks and Brett Laurie is awesome? What does that say about AA?
Yeah, that's not great. It's not that. You know who might be great is Kendall Graveman, who was part of that deal as well. He's been lights out in spring. For the Oakland A's. Again, it's spring, so it's I don't know how much stock you can put into spring results, but he's been scary good. So the Blue Jays start the season on Monday in the Bronx against the Yankees, Tuesday off, because they always build in that off day in that first series outdoors in cold weather in case there's a rainout. They go to Baltimore, return home opener against the Rays. That's a 7:07 start. I would kind of like to see that in afternoon. I know, and the home opener is always sold out, and there's always the drunk idiots in the 500 level. Remember, there was a couple of years ago where they didn't sell booze because it gets so ridiculous. Maybe putting this game in the afternoon might eliminate some of that. I kind of like the afternoon opener. I'm excited to see them at Yankee Stadium at 1:05. Do you like the 7:07 home opener start, Gary?
I don't mind it. I mean, it's prime time. It's the first, you know, game of the season.
People have jobs, I guess, right?
Exactly.
Real jobs.
You know, I'd rather join the friends at a local drinking establishment instead of texting each other in the middle of the afternoon while we're all working. Mind you, we work here and we're watching the games anyways. But one thing I'm most excited about that opening day is another young arm that hasn't been talked a lot about this spring, and that's Drew Hutchinson.
Yeah.
I mean, he could play a key role in this rotation, and you haven't heard a lot about him.
Guy's only 24.
Yep.
Like we feel like he's been around forever. He's 24 years old.
So do we think he's the best pitcher in the rotation? Is he the guy that comes out and is your, at the end of the year, number one? And is that too much pressure or too many expectations to put on a 24-year-old pitcher?
He seems like he has the makeup of a guy who, I don't know, bulldog. I feel it's a little too cliche, but that type of mentality. Also, I mean, as much as I don't know if expect is the right word, but am hoping that Sanchez and Norris can do the job. He's the most proven guy. I mean, he did it. Made 30 starts last year. Had some ups and downs. And you look at some of the stuff that's been written about him recently, second half of the season, really figured out that slider. He's the most bankable arm of the young pitchers. Now, I mean, you can bank on Dickey and Burley giving you 30 starts and 200-ish innings. But outside of them, of the young starters, he's the guy you can most rely on for something. I don't know if it's an ERA of 4.5 like he had last year. You hope it's better than that, but at least you know what you're going to get, you think, with Drew Hutchinson.
Can the Jays win if Drew Hutchinson has a 4.5 ERA? Can they be in it in September?
It's a good question, but I think they can if those younger than him arms live up to their potential. Because you're looking at Norris as a guy who could be, I mean, even the most lofty projections of Drew Hutchinson seem as a 2-3 middle of the rotation guy. Daniel Norris, if he fulfills that potential, I mean, he's a strikeout king. Struck everybody out in the minor leagues. We didn't get to see that same arm when he came up in September because he had the bone chips in the elbow that they alleviated with some surgery. But if those young kids live up to their potentials, I mean, we could be looking at a rotation that's completely upside down from the one that starts the season where you've got Norris as the 3 and Sanchez as the 5. Could be looking at those guys as 1-2. But again, lots of question marks as we go into the season. So they play game one of two games in Montreal yesterday. 46,314 fans. There was some tweets that were showing the 401 at about 1 o'clock yesterday afternoon. It was jammed up. People going from Toronto to Montreal to go see that game. Everybody got out of yesterday's game healthy, which is good on that turf that sees two baseball games a year on it. And by all accounts, the amenities at the Big O aren't exactly well-maintained because there's, you know, 364 other days in the year where there's nothing going on in there.
The good news is there are no sprinklers on that field.
Yeah.
Yes. And Michael Saunders isn't there anyway, so that's good. Whenever we have these games, and there's banners there, and whenever we go to Montreal for baseball, the conversation arises about the return of Major League Baseball to Quebec, to Montreal. They'd need a new stadium. Rob Manfred talked about that. But he doesn't close the door on Montreal. And I guess he's not going to close the door on anything. But do we believe in the possibility of Montreal hosting a Major League Baseball team and being successful in doing so, Gary?
I think so. I think we're really close to it. I think I can see that announcement coming in the next 3 to 5 years. I really do. And I think a key part of having that Montreal team sustain some success is, I mean, other than being successful on the field, is having them in the American League East. I think putting them in the AL with the Toronto Blue Jays, the AL East, with Boston, with New York, I think that would really help fill the building. I mean, Montreal is a great town. You mentioned it yesterday. Look at the 401, all the people from Toronto heading for this mini two-game series. Imagine several series in Montreal with the Blue Jays every year. Imagine the New York fans and the Boston fans flocking up to Montreal for all those series. I think that would be key to the long-term sustainability of having a franchise in Montreal.
I'm just not sure what the upside is for MLB.
Right.
Why would they want another team in a foreign country? Is it another place where players are not going to want to go, just like they don't want to come here? What are the TV ratings going to be like? It's all about TV for major sports leagues these days, and I just don't see Montreal as a big draw. I don't see it.
Do you think Montreal is not an improvement over Tampa Bay right now?
Yeah.
I mean, Tampa Bay is losing money. And if you're the other MLB owners, I mean, aren't you sick of kind of propping these guys up? I mean, wouldn't you rather take the chances with Montreal?
And you know what? The Rays do well local television. But yeah, it is. I mean, it's still a gate-driven league when you're looking at 81 home games. The amount of revenue you can generate through turnstiles.
Well, you can generate a lot of revenue, but it's not a gate-driven league, right? They've got massive TV deals. And that's where most local, of the money's
the local deals. I mean, you got specific teams like the Dodgers have that massive deal with Time Warner or whatever. I mean, the billion-dollar deal. They don't have. I mean, they have national deals, but it's not. It's nothing like even the NBA signing that massive deal that's going to up the salary cap. It's almost going to double the salary cap, or the NFL where they don't have to sell a single ticket and everybody makes money. It's not quite like that. I mean, you got specific markets where the local TV deal is pretty darn good. And who knows what the deal is here in Toronto because it's the same team broadcasting the game that owns it. But yeah, you got specific teams that do well. But I still think that a lot of revenue is generated through those turnstiles when you've got so many games. And if you're only drawing 11,000 or announcing 11,000, that's not great. Although, I mean, Jeff Blair talked about it a couple of weeks ago. He could see Major League Baseball going to another, putting another team in the New York area, whether that's New Jersey, before he sees baseball going back to Montreal. All right, before we wrap up the baseball segment here, I want to get our predictions in the American League East. Talked about the what-ifs. There's a bunch of what-ifs, but let's man up. Mike Wilner refuses to do a prediction, so we're going to be more of more men's than Mike Wilner. He's the only guy, by the way, that he refuses to make a prediction. He won't be goaded into it.
That's why he still has a job.
Yeah, he's a smart man, really, because you can't go back in his history and look at his predictions and how well he's done. All right, Gary, your American League East predictions and the Blue Jays as far as a win total.
As much as it pains me to say, I think the Boston Red Sox will win this division. I don't think it'll take a lot of wins to win this division. They'll probably be in that 88 to 90 range, I imagine, and still win the division. The Blue Jays will probably come in around between 82 and 85, I imagine.
What do you got, Greg?
Well, I'm going to agree that I think Boston is the team to beat right now. But I think it'll take more wins than that. I think Boston's a 95-win team. I think the Jays are going to be contending for the wild card spot with, you know, 92 to 94.
Wow. I hope you're right.
I'm a homer, but it all comes down to the depth and the kids, so we'll see.
So you got the Jays beating the Red Sox?
No, I've got the Red Sox winning the AL East and the Jays contending for the wild card.
All right, I'm going to flip-flop because I feel like I've got kind of the – I'm on record with 88 wins for the Blue Jays, but I feel like everybody's kind of picking them to be 86 to 89.
I just picked them to be like 92.
Yeah, I know, everybody except for you.
the baseball expert.
Yeah. So I'm going to – all right, yeah, I will be a little lofty. You know what? This team has had good seasons in the past that have kind of been forgotten outside of 92-93. They haven't made the playoffs. They've been extremely unlucky. Nothing's gone right for 162 games for this team in the last 20 years. I think this is finally the year it all happens for this team. I'm not saying that they're the best team on paper going into the season, but sports are all about luck. This sport is all about luck. I'm going to say the Blue Jays do get all the luck in the world. Yeah, I'll pick them for 94 as well.
Bam.
To win the American League East. And I think the Red Sox rotation is just god-awful. It's horrible. And they're going to have to do something with it.
And they will.
Yes, they definitely will if it is as leaky as I expect it to be. When we come back, Raptors lose in Brooklyn yesterday, 114-109. Grievous Vasquez just watched Darren Williams go by him about 100 times in that game. Kyle Lowry cannot return soon enough, although it might not happen until the final games of the regular season. Where are the Raptors as they head towards the playoffs? We will discuss next. This is Sportsnet Magazine Live. I'm Ben Ennis alongside Gary Mello and John Gregg on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
With a taste of what's inside the current issue of Sportsnet Magazine, here's Stephen Brunt.
Last winter, Alex Anthopoulos made a curious decision. During a crucial time for his Toronto Blue Jays, when winning was the only option, the general manager identified Russell Martin as his number one free agent target. The Jays already had a catcher, didn't they? Wasn't Anthopoulos taking some of his limited resources and fixing something that wasn't broken? By the time the team headed north for the season, pretty much everyone had come to understand what Anthopoulos was thinking. Martin had taken charge of the pitching staff, changed the clubhouse dynamic. And did we mention that he's Canadian? Martin's personal story is unique. He was born in suburban Toronto and grew up in Winnipeg, in Montreal, and in Paris, the son of two fascinating parents. His mother, Suzanne Janson, is a francophone actress and singer from just outside of Winnipeg. And his dad, Russell Sr., made his living playing saxophone for those who ride Montreal's metro, making do on whatever they threw into his case. By the time he was 12, Martin was living full-time with his dad, rolling quarters to help pay the bills, living on big pots of chili that lasted a week, and playing baseball with him every day, all summer long.
My dad would buy like enough food to supply for like a week. He'd like make like one big chili, so I'd eat chili for like a whole week. Awesome chili. Banging chili.
Russell, Nathan, Coltrane, Janson, Martin has the words World Citizen tattooed across his chest. For him, it's not just an empty slogan.
This story and more appears in the latest edition of Sportsnet Magazine, available on Next Issue and in the Apple Newsstand.
I'm not going to rush it. I'm not doing it. And you know, I rushed it in the first time and see what happened. I'm out another 5-6 games. So I'm going to take my time. And honestly, I don't want this to come back. I don't want it to be a reoccurring thing.
As Raptors
give me some
point guard,
news.
Kyle Lowry, speaking about his back injury after yesterday's 114-109 loss in Brooklyn to the Nets. This is Sportsnet Magazine Live on the Sportsnet Radio Network. I'm Ben Ennis alongside John Grigg and Gary Mello. So no Lowry. Who knows when he's going to be back? Not going to be back, though, tonight as the Raptors have the Celtics down at the Air Canada Center. Man, they missed him yesterday. The offense was part of it, but Rivas Vasquez, even in the best of times, is not much of a defender, and yesterday was not the best of times. He got torched on the defensive end of the ball by Deron Williams, who ends up with 31 points, 11 assists on 11 of 18 shooting. Gents, the Raptors fall back into fourth in the Eastern Conference. They are now a game back of the Bulls. They own the tiebreaker on Chicago, so the Bulls would have to beat them outright to claim third in the Eastern Conference. Fourth, so that would set up a matchup in the first round of the Washington Wizards. Is that where they want to be, John?
Sure. I mean, what's the success story for this team this year? I mean, I guess it's win around, right?
Yeah.
And then, you know, when you're talking about third or fourth or fifth or whatever, I think everybody's kind of looking past that first round. They're looking at, you know, who they're going to get in the second round. And, you know, can they beat either Atlanta or Cleveland? For me, the answer is no. Those two teams will torch the Raptors, who are a horrible defensive team, whether you're looking inside or outside. But yeah, whether it's Washington or Milwaukee, I would give the Raps as good a chance to beat either of them. I can't see either of those teams beating the Raptors, assuming Kyle Lowry is healthy.
I think Washington is obviously the most favorable matchup
sure.
for the Raptors. But one thing they have to keep in mind, too, is if you get into that third slot, the way Brooklyn's been playing, you know, Brooklyn, you know, they're 8-2 in their last 10. They've won 6 in a row. If they, you know, if they squeeze up into that sixth spot and all of a sudden you're the Raptors in 3, that could be a dangerous matchup for them. I mean, we saw what Deron Williams did to, you know, them last night in the perimeter defense and how that was lacking and stopping him. So, you know, it would be a very dangerous thing to start looking ahead to that second round because they're by no means a lock to get out of the first.
And what about what Brook Lopez did last night to our boy JV? Like, I mean, he was a monster. There was no contest last night.
And a great fro as well. I mean, it's just dangerous.
Gotta love the curl.
How many games does Kyle Lowry need to play here down the stretch to be ready for the playoffs? Because it seems like they're finally going to be very cautious with him. They're not going to, you know, blow their brains out trying to win a game that might be somewhat meaningful to get Kyle Lowry in there. But I mean, I think you got it. You got to have him at least start one game, don't you?
I think so. I mean, you know, take caution the fact that he came back a little early against Detroit, and he said as much, and he came out of that game. So you don't want to rush him back at this time of the year. I mean, he's probably the key figure for this team going to the playoffs. Seeing that they're at home today to Boston, going a four-game road trip, I don't play him until that final regular season game. They're home to, next Wednesday. Two Wednesdays from now to Charlotte. That's probably the only game you give Kyle Lowry before the start of the playoffs.
Yeah, I mean, it'd be nice to get him into a game, but, I mean, I don't even put him in that game if I'm not 100% sure. And even then, maybe, you know, just give him 15 minutes or something. Just see what, you know, get him warmed up, get him in some game action. But I'm very, very cautious with Kyle Lowry right now because he's the key to this team. If they're going to do anything in the playoffs, they need him out there handling the ball and distributing it. DeRozan, yes, needs to score and get to the line. They got to play some better D, but they need Lowry doing his thing at the point.
DeMar DeRozan was outstanding yesterday. He has been great for the last couple of weeks. He was 27 points on 10 of 20 shooting. Got to the line 8 times as well, had 8 assists and 8 rebounds. Fantastic game for him, playing 41 minutes, which I don't know if that's ideal as we prepare for the playoffs. Speaking of preparing for the playoffs, we see teams around the NBA do this. We saw a team that matched up against the Raptors last year do it. They jockeyed for position, did the Nets, to get the Raptors in the first round. Talked about whether fourth is the right place for this team. Seems to me like that's an ideal situation for the Raptors to be in, to finish fourth, You get the Wizards, who you've owned in the regular season. You avoid the Cavs in the second round. Should the Raptors and Dwayne Casey be doing everything they can to finish fourth?
I think you want to do everything you can to prepare yourself best for the playoffs. And if that means that you're losing games because you're working on things and trying to get better, then that's okay. But if you are, you know, losing games because you're trying to lose games, then that's not a good mindset to have going into the playoffs.
Didn't hurt the Nets, though.
Yeah, but the Nets were a veteran team with guys like Paul Pierce and Kevin Garnett who understood, who have won championships, know what it takes to win in the playoffs, and understood what the team was doing. This is a young team, unproven team in the playoffs. You got to go in on a high note as much as possible. And I mean, third or fourth or whatever, I mean, you just want to be playing your best and have everybody be confident. And you can't afford to be losing games, you know, for any kind of jockeying at the end.
And I mean, that could be another positive coming out of sitting Kyle Lowry for the last few games. You know what I mean? Like, finishing fourth is not a bad thing for the Raptors, as long as they're playing good basketball heading into the playoffs and are feeling confident. Because as John mentions, this is a young team. This is a young team that can't afford to be, you know, jockeying for position or dropping games because they're confident in their playoff matchup. They haven't proven anything yet.
Yeah, they haven't proven they can play defense on a regular basis, giving up 114 points to the Brooklyn Nets yesterday. This is a team who made its mark in the NBA a year ago because it did play smothering defense, and for whatever reason, we haven't seen that nearly consistently enough with this team, and maybe that will change down the stretch, and maybe they can just flip the switch come playoff time, but it's definitely been a question mark all season long, even when they were off to that tremendous start to the season.
I wonder what does that mean for Dwayne Casey, who comes in, you know, touted as a defensive coach, and he's got a brutal defensive team right now. Like, there's nobody on this team who can lock down anybody, right? I mean, I don't know. I mean, I think I like Casey as a coach. I like the way he acts in the media. He seems to have good rapport with his players, but he's not doing what he's supposed to be doing. I just don't know what that means for his future in this town with this team.
I mean, it's tough. There's only so much you can do as a coach as well, right? You look at Vasquez last night getting burned by Williams. I mean, as a coach, what do you do in that situation when he's your backup point guard? I mean, there's very little you can do. I mean, you can kind of call for help and such, but at some point, you know, Vasquez needs to stop Williams.
So is that Dwayne Casey then? I mean, this team's like fourth in the NBA in scoring. Is that him playing with the pieces that he's being given instead of trying to instill, you know, a defensive ethos or system or whatever? That, you know, they're 21st in points against, and this is not what you would expect from this team.
It's head scratching because you look at the personnel, it's not that much different from a year ago, but yeah, the makeup of this team, and for whatever reason, the way they go about their business is entirely different. They score maybe more than that team a year ago. The defensive effort or ability just hasn't been there all season long. When we come back, going to switch gears to the NHL. We approach the playoffs, which is exciting, and Sportsnet's got you covered with everything, including the draft lottery as well, which goes in a couple of Saturdays, which, I mean, man, you go back a ways to the last time a draft lottery meant this much. Clearly, the Sidney Crosby one meant a whole lot to a franchise. We might not be talking about a Penguins team in Pittsburgh if not for that. But we will give our trophy picks as we approach the end of the regular season, and we will talk about Connor McDavid as well. This is Sportsnet Magazine Live. I'm Ben Ennis alongside John Gregg and Gary Mello on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Carlson starting back out for the Capitals. Played it across to Ovechkin. Alexander Ovechkin cutting in, scores! What a shot, what a goal! Alexander Ovechkin, 51 of the year.
Yeah, he's pretty good and stuff. This is Sportsnet Magazine Live on the Sportsnet Radio Network. I'm Ben Ennis alongside John Gregg and Gary Mello. It's award season in the National Hockey League as we approach the final days of the regular season. Alex Ovechkin, he has 52 goals this season, his sixth 50-goal campaign. How about this list of guys who have also scored 50 goals in six seasons? Wayne Gretzky, Mike Bossy, Mario Lemieux, Guy Lafleur, Marcel Dion. Is that a list you'd like to be on? Would you like to be on that list?
It is amazing what he is doing in this day and age. I mean,
you don't score 50 goals these days.
You look at the list of those guys, those are 70s and 80s and 90s players, right?
Right.
I mean, this is a systems-based league where you roll four lines, where, you know, you're the The coaches coach the hell out of their players. The goalies are better than ever.
They look like the Michelin man.
Yeah. I mean, it is amazing. I mean, he is the most dominant player of his generation, hands down. Sorry, Sidney Crosby, but the things that Ovi has done put him on top right now.
He's more dominant than Sidney Crosby.
Looking at the numbers. I mean, yeah, he hasn't won a cup, you know.
By the way, that was not a statement. That was a question of your statement.
Yeah, well, I mean,
I don't want that taken out of context.
Crosby obviously has done great things too. And, you know, he's right up there in career, you know, points per game and whatnot. But I mean, just Ovi can just do it all, right? I mean, he hammers guys. He's showing this year that he can play more of a team game. He scores goals.
He was a minus $10 billion a year ago.
Yeah, but I mean, that whole team sucked a year ago, and now look at them, right?
Who affects a team more? You put Sidney Crosby on the Buffalo Sabres. You put Alex Ovechkin on the Buffalo Sabres. The Sabres are still the Sabres, but maybe they win a couple extra games. Who affects that team more? Mello, get in on this.
I think Sidney Crosby. I mean, Alex Ovechkin.
I don't think there's any debate about it.
All right.
and I get it. Yeah, listen, obviously Alex Ovechkin's a great player. He scored whatever is 26 goals on the power play this season. He's scored a bunch on the power play. That's boosted his points total.
Sure.
Crosby can do more. He can win draws both ends of the ice. I'm surprised that you would take Ovechkin.
I'm not saying that I would take Ovechkin if I was starting a team over Crosby. I'm saying that the numbers as they're panning out right now are showing Ovechkin to be the most dominant player of his generation. He's doing things that all-time greats did, and he's doing it in a much, much harder league to play in.
Dominant goal scorer, no question. I'm with you 100%. I just think Crosby's a more dominant overall player and a guy who can change a franchise a little bit more. But we got a little off topic because you kind of shocked me with that statement. Let's segue then into the conversation of Hart Trophy and who should win it.
Ovechkin's not going to win it.
Really?
No, I don't think so.
I don't think so either. That means, I guess, that Carey Price has won it, and he'll win the Vezina and the Hart. I mean, can you even make a bet on the Vezina trophy right now in Vegas? Is it like 1 to 1,000? You have to bet 1,000 to win $1 right now? Like, that is happening, obviously. I don't know. What if he went? If he started every game the rest of the season and allowed 10 goals a game, would he not win it then? I guess that would be what he'd have to do. He's got it, the Vezina. And if you're going to give him the Hart, that means you're, I don't know, giving short shrift a little bit to a guy who scored 52 goals, going to up that total, going to be around 55 in Alex Ovechkin. Is that fair, Mello?
Carey Price has had such a spectacular season. I think the interesting thing will be if they meet in the playoffs, then we'll really see the true test of who's more valuable to their team. But Carey Price's numbers right across the board have been fantastic. You look what he's done with that Montreal team. And, I mean, Montreal's not exactly the most offensively gifted team. I mean, they're built from the back end out with Carey Price and, you know, a stud in P.K. Subban on the blue line. So he is, in every sense of the term, MVP. He is the most valuable player to his team, no doubt.
Yeah, you look at that team's offense and, you know, I didn't look today, but they're like bottom five in goals for, or in power play, and like bottom eight or something like that in goals for. I mean, and Price is putting together the kind of season that we haven't seen from a goaltender since Dominic Hasek. Even when you look at the last goalie, Jose Theodore, to win an MVP, Price's numbers are better across the board, and he's better in more categories than versus his peers than Theodore was as well. And if you get into the underlying numbers, it's becoming even more dominant a season. So for me, it's hands down Carey Price, just because he's got his team on his back and fighting for a President's Trophy still this late in the season.
Is it fair to have him in the conversation? I mean, there are people in baseball who say that it's not fair to have a pitcher in the Cy Young Award voting and the MVP. It's so different, and you can't compare the two. Is it fair to have a goalie win the Vezina and the Hart Trophy? Because it is difficult to compare. Obviously, the Canadians are a totally different team without Carey Price, but so are the Washington Capitals. They're a totally different team without Alex Ovechkin. I mean, who's worse off? You take Carey Price off of
the Habs for sure.
No doubt.
Are they still a playoff team, though?
No, they couldn't be. They can't score goals.
Where are the Washington Capitals, who are, you know, still a fringy playoff team as it is with Alex Ovechkin, though?
Yeah, I don't think they're a playoff team either, but I think, you know, the Habs fall apart without Carey Price leading them.
And we saw that last year in the playoffs.
Yeah.
Well, that's another good point as well. I mean, Carey Price, he's had moments in the playoffs. Still hasn't quite gotten them over the hump. And yes, I know he was injured last year, and maybe that's a totally different Eastern Conference final against the New York Rangers. Obviously it is, if he's healthy. I want to see Washington and Montreal. Now that you've mentioned it, Mello, can you imagine if it's kind of a flipping the script of a couple of years ago where the Capitals were that President's Trophy winners? They go into that series against the Canadiens and they stole it from them. If the Canadiens go in with all the hype and the Capitals steal that series away from them, I mean, that would be something else.
That would be.
I'd love to see that. All right. So if it is Carey Price winning that Hart Trophy, let's talk about the also-rans then, because I'm kind of with you. I think that he will win the Hart Trophy. Ovechkin, he's great. Having a great season. He's had many. Should we be giving more attention to what John Tavares has done on Long Island and getting that team to places they haven't been in years, Gary?
I mean, I'm a big John Tavares fan. Talk about starting franchises. Which player do you pick? I think John Tavares would be top of my list. I'm a big fan of his. And what he's done with this Islanders team, I mean, the Islanders have been a perennial laughingstock the last couple of years. Mind you, they've built out a team with a lot of good young players. You know, adding a couple of good defensemen on the back end has certainly helped lift this team into a playoff position. But John Tavares has just been quietly putting together a fantastic season on the island.
Yeah, I mean, points-wise, yes. I mean, I was looking into this last week for something for the magazine, and you know, there is no more sheltered star player in this league than John Tavares. His zone starts are something like, you know, closing in on 70%. Relative to his teammates, it's like 24%. I mean, all he does is start in the offensive zone. He does not kill penalties. Like, I think he averages like a second per game in PK time this year. You know, the guys like Crosby and Toews and Kopitar and Bergeron, all these guys who have won cups in the past 5 or 7 years, they play in both ends of the rink. And sometimes they start more in their own end than in the offensive zone. So for me, I mean, although I'm not saying Tavares isn't a super skilled player, and I understand that it's a strategy by Jack Capuano to put his best player in the situation to succeed offensively, which is what that team needs. I just don't see him being on the same level as the Toews and Crosbys of the world.
Aren't you kind of speaking out of the both sides of your mouth here? Because you say, like, Ovechkin's this dominant player. You'd have him over Sidney Crosby. He does one thing. He doesn't kill penalties either. He scores goals. He plays on the power play. He scores goals. It's the most difficult thing to do in the sport, and he does it better than anybody else. But he only does one thing. I mean, is not... Is,
yeah, but he does
the
it
argument
so
not
much
be made?
Better than anybody else that... It makes up for the other things, in my mind.
So John Tavares is not, he's an offensive player, but he's just not quite the offensive player that Alex Ovechkin is, and that's why you remove him from Hart Trophy consideration?
No, I don't remove him. I think he's good for a third-place finish this year. I think he's a very good player. I just don't think, I think he's too much of a specialist right now to be, you know, the dominant, the MVP type that everybody... Every winning team needs, and you know, you need your best player to be your best player for 200 feet of the ice, and he's not right now for the Islanders.
Do you see it more being sheltered or good coaching?
I think it's a strategy. What I'm trying to say is I think for your team to win, you need that guy to not be sheltered. You need him to be winning draws on the penalty kill. You need him to be scoring shorthanded goals. You need to be trusting him in every situation. And Jack Capuano isn't doing that right now.
Well, is that going, I mean, come playoff time, are we not going to see a shorter bench and then maybe him being exposed?
Well, that's just it, right? 2 minutes left to go in the game. The Islanders up by one. Will John Tavares be taking that defensive zone faceoff? I guess that'll be the true test of how sheltered he is and how much of that is based on coaching strategy.
If you follow the pattern from this season, he won't be taking that faceoff. And I think, for me, that's a problem.
Which is good for Grabowski.
Yes.
Speaking of guys who are going under the radar, who will be also rans and maybe shouldn't be, how about the guy leading the NHL in points right now, Sidney Crosby at 80, Ovechkin and Tavares are one back at 79. But yeah, by and large, the Penguins have underperformed, but I mean, he's got 80 points and maybe he has less to work with this year, John, and he's put up those 80 points.
Yeah, I mean, he's, you know, no doubt that he can still score. I mean, that's the thing about the MVP race this year. There's not I mean, Ovechkin's the only dominant offensive player, and he, you know, he's all about the goals, right? That's why it's Carey Price's to lose for sure, is because he's putting up a season that no offensive player can compare to. But yeah, I mean, the expectations on Sidney Crosby are so high that even when he leads the league in points per game and could very well win the Art Ross Trophy, it's still not good enough. I mean, that's how high people, that's what people expect of him. And the same with the Penguins, who right now are a wild card team.
We haven't mentioned, I mean, Carey Price is having a dominant season, and he's done it all season long with the save percentage at .935 and the goals against of .195. But you just go 0.005 of a percentage down, and there's Devan Dubnyk, who hasn't done it all season long in Minnesota, but man, he has changed the fortunes of that Minnesota Wild team, who some people are picking to be a cup finalist. He's got the goals against just over 2 at .207. He almost wished there was a Vezina for the Eastern and Western Conference, right? Because he would get that, no question, Gary.
I don't know. Pekka Rinne might have something to say about that as well. He's put together a pretty decent season in Nashville, and there's a team that's probably overachieved as well, right? So, but Devan Dubnyk, since he's been in Minnesota, he certainly elevated that team. And that will be a team that most Western Conference's powerhouses will want to avoid coming the first round.
It really is amazing what systems can do for a guy, right? I mean, this is a guy who was a first-round pick. You know, it took him a while to get to the league, but then ends up in Edmonton, and damn, no goalie wants to be in Edmonton ever anymore, right? You know, and then gets out of there. He's in the AHL last year, for God's sakes. And then he gets a goalie coach who can help him in Phoenix, and then he gets moved to Minnesota, and now he's, what, the best goalie in the league since he went there? And that's because he got a little bit of confidence from Sean Burke in Arizona, and he's got a team playing in front of him that limits chances and you know, more often than not, wins the possession game. And it's amazing. It really is.
Yeah, no question Marty Brodeur was a great goalie, but you take him out of that system in New Jersey, I wonder what the numbers are. And not to say, yeah, again, not to take anything away from these goalies when you're talking about Dubnyk or Marty Brodeur. But yeah, systems are a whole lot of the underlying number, although there are guys that can defy the systems, like Carey Price.
For sure.
Let's talk about the Norris Trophy, where it doesn't seem like there's a dominant defensive player this year. There's nobody putting up massive numbers. So, I don't know. It seems like you just go back to the well with your Shea Webbers, your Drew Doughtys. I mean, are we kind of sleeping on P.K. Subban maybe there, Gary?
I think a little bit. I mean, if you bring Carey Price into the conversation for Vezina and Hart, it's pretty difficult to ignore what P.K. Subban has done on that blue line. As mentioned, they're not an overly offensive team. They rely on Carey Price and kind of shutting it down. But P.K. Subban logs some pretty important minutes for that team. And he does that at the offensive end as well. I think he's averaging like over 20 minutes of even strength, you know, time on ice, that type of thing per game. So he is a key part of that team, and it's difficult to have a Norris Trophy conversation without including him in the top three.
Yeah, I mean, for me, it's still Drew Doughty, who plays, you know, 29 minutes a game and does everything for that team. I mean, at times he's more rover than defenseman, and he's one of the, you know, more exciting guys to watch in the league, regardless of position for me. And, you know, that's if they don't make the playoffs, can you give that guy the Norris Trophy? I don't know. I don't know that you can. And in that case, then maybe, yeah, we're back to PK.
So if they don't, you give it to PK?
If I had a vote, I would still vote for Doughty, but I don't think that he will get the votes needed if they don't make the playoffs.
It is such a different game in the Eastern and Western Conference. Kind of joked about the fact that you would like to have a Vezina Trophy in the West because Dubnyk would probably win it, where Price is going to run away with it in the Eastern Conference. I mean, is that something that the NHL should do? Because it is so different. I mean, the East is... maybe not this year as much as in years past. And yes, the Rangers are good, and we could have very easily have Stanley Cup champion come out at the Eastern Conference. But I mean, should there be two different awards? Does that make sense? Or is that unnecessary?
I think it's unnecessary.
I think it's really a bit of overkill. I mean,
everybody loves an award. Let's give everybody an award. Participation award.
Let's not water it down. I mean,
there's 10 nominees for Best Picture at the Oscars now.
Like I said, let's not water it down.
I still haven't seen any of them.
Yeah, no. You didn't miss much this year. It wasn't a great year for movies. What about the Jack Adams Award? It's so difficult to quantify head coaching in any sport. Usually they give it to the team that had the lowest expectations that exceeded them the most. If that's the case, should it not be slam dunk for Bob Hartley?
Bob Hartley is definitely in that conversation. Actually, this season, you have a lot of good candidates in that running for that award. I mean, you look at Barry Trotz, you look at Long Island. I mean, there are so many coaches that you could give that award to. For me, Barry Trotz, looking at how he's turned around that Washington Capitals team and what he's getting out of Ovechkin, to me, I think he's my top pick for sure this season.
Yeah, it's funny because this is like the first time in a long time that Ovi's had a good coach, right? Like not a rookie behind the bench, a guy who's a seasoned vet who's well respected around the league. And look what's happening with that team. I mean, they took a lot of chances with a lot of guys, you know, the Hunters and the Oateses of the world, and it didn't work out. And now you see what it could be and what it could have been before. What about Bob Hartley in Calgary? I mean, is there another team that, I mean, they were supposed to be in the Mick Eichel running, and they're not by any means. They might make the playoffs, and, you know, he's got those young kids just humming along, playing, you know, a game that they probably, they're better, their record is better than it should be, but
well, that's
it's still.
That's what I was going to say. I mean, you love the advanced stats.
I love them.
Advanced metrics. You got your abacus out, and you just love using it.
I just use my fingers, man.
Okay, yeah. So it sucks when things go over 10, but this is a team that, I mean, you ask anybody, even, you know, observers who are not into the analytics, they have more third period comebacks than anybody in the National Hockey League. How much of that is just dumb luck? How much of it's coaching? How much of it is skill? It's just hard to quantify.
I don't think it's sustainable, but I think there's something to be said for the coach that can keep the young kids thinking positive and, you know, can get them rallying around him. I think there's a lot to be said for that.
Speaking of that team, the Calgary Flames, maybe no more exciting player than Johnny Gaudreau this season. When we talk about the Calder Trophy, he's going to be right in there. Who wins it? Is this an award that has anything to do with making the playoffs as well? I know they're all individual awards, but I know, John, you were talking about the Norris and it, you know, changing things if the Kings don't make the playoffs as far as Doughty is concerned. Do you feel the same way about the Calder?
I don't, because I think a lot of the best players who come into the league are coming into the crappiest teams in the league and don't often make the playoffs. I mean, last year we had Nathan MacKinnon and that team made the playoffs and they were a great regular season team. But in general, no, I think, you know, for rookies, it's a different way to be graded. But for me, you know, Johnny Gaudreau's a nice story and Philip Forsberg's been there all season long. Aaron Ekblad, I mean, the things he's doing as an 18-year-old in this league, the poise he's showing, even the points he's putting up, playing the hardest position. He's been outstanding. And, you know, he's going to obviously anchor that Cats team for years to come. But for me, he's been the most impressive.
Executive of the year. Tell me who your executive of the year is, John.
Well, does anybody have any doubt? I mean, it's Tim Murray.
I am with you. I am 100% with you. Is there any chance he actually wins this thing?
No, I don't think he can actually win it because, you know, I think you want to give it to a team that's actually winning. But there is no doubt that Tim Murray's plan to tank this season, you know, he started it in October 2013 when he traded Vanek. And, you know, then he turned around and traded Molson. And now they've got a ton of draft picks in the first couple of rounds this year and next year. He's traded every goalie who's done anything for him this year.
Picked up a guy who won't even play this year who's good.
Picked up a guy who can play with Connor McDavid next year, but who makes their team worse this year, and also gave up arguably their best defenseman in that deal. I mean, it's just been a masterstroke by Tim Murray this year to ensure himself and his team the best chances at a franchise-changing player.
Why can't he win it? Why? I mean, when you're looking at a job that an executive has done, I don't even know if there's an argument to be made outside of Tim Murray. He has set. Now, I guess it could all blow up in his face if the young guys don't pan out and they miss out on McDavid and Eichel's nothing and whatever. We could look back and say, oh, Tim Murray was kind of a dope this season. But why can't he make it? Is that just too embarrassing for the NHL, Gary?
I think so. Considering how much the NHL has been trying to distance themselves from the whole tanking conversation, I think rewarding a GM whose team's been in full-on tank mode for a full season would be a bad thing.
Do they think we're stupid? Like, do they think that we're not paying attention?
I mean, I know you want to award excellence, and that's why I can't, you know, get away from Tim Murray. He's been so excellent in doing what he's doing and following through on his plan.
Maloney's been giving him a run for his money, though.
Yeah. But I don't think they think we're not paying attention. I think that they want to give it to people who are winning. And it's the same reason why you can't win the Hart Trophy if your team doesn't make the playoffs, right? I mean, there are arguably, I mean, well, not this year, but in years past, there's been players who are arguably more valuable to their team, even though those teams don't make the playoffs. And you just don't win the award that way.
All right, so who's going to win it then? Who's legitimately going to win it?
It could be David Poile in Nashville. I mean, he brought in a new coach, you know, changed the culture in that team, went out and got James Neal, signed Mike Ribeiro, who was coming off a a bad season away from the ice, which many people, you know, thought affected his play on the ice. He's got that team, you know, battling all season long for the Central Division title. And he's built it from the back out. They've got the best defense in the league. They're the envy of the NHL when it comes to that.
Do I get thrown off the panel if I mention Garth Snow?
I think he should be right there.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know what? In all honesty, I do like what he's done with that team. I mean, last offseason adding, you know, Letty and Boychuk, I think is playing a huge part in this team being in a playoff position this season. But I got to agree with John. I mean, David Poile, what he's done in Nashville, I don't think anyone was expecting him to be, you know, in the conversation for President's Trophy. And, you know, the Ribeiro signing was fantastic. And, you know, that is a team that is built from the net out. And as we've seen in the NHL, that wins you some games. It's the same thing in Montreal.
Can we at least say that nobody's laughing at that Garth Snow hire anymore? Can we at least say that?
I don't think we can say that.
Really?
I think we can say that Garth Snow has finally had a good couple of years. But, I mean, he's still got a lot of work to do to make up for a lot of the work that he's done in years prior.
I mean, what does the guy have to do? Really, it's tough to impress you, man.
I guess. I mean, yes, he fell into John Tavares at number one overall.
Sure.
He did make a trade for a goalie to actually have a goalie on that team, so that's good. I mean, and he took advantage of a couple of teams who were up against the cap and gave away some picks for some good defensemen. So, yes, his body of work over the past year is very good.
But his drafting record hasn't been too bad. I mean, they've drafted some pretty good kids and Ryan Strome and Oposo and stuff like that.
Yeah, no, for sure. I mean, I don't always put that all on the GM, but I mean, when you're drafting high every year, you better hit some homers, you know? But, you know, it's been laughable on the island for years and years with Garth Snow there. And, I mean, there's an argument to be made that he is one of the biggest reasons why they won't be on the island next year. Why they'll be in Brooklyn. It's because of the way he's managed that team.
Well, that's a good thing, though. Who wants to be on Long Island? Get to go to Brooklyn and be a hipster. That's great. Yeah. Wear your tight jeans.
Skinny ties for everybody.
Yeah. Mello knows a thing or two about that.
Wearing it right now.
You are. You're a king hipster. All right. So we talked about Tim Murray maybe being GM of the year. In 2 weeks' time, exciting times because... No, the NHL playoff start, I get it. Okay, that'll be exciting too, I guess. But also on Sportsnet and CBC and Hockey Night in Canada, the NHL draft lottery takes place, and it's the biggest one since Sidney Crosby draft lottery. I don't think there's any question about that. I mean, we'd all be shocked now if Connor McDavid is not a franchise changer. It's incredible to have that amount of pressure on you as an 18-year-old, but... He hasn't done anything to warrant otherwise. Where does the NHL want him to go? That's the question. Is there a case to be made that it's the Toronto Maple Leafs? Do they want him to go to the Sabres and be rewarded for this obvious tanking? Gary, where does the NHL, if they had their druthers, and I'm not saying that there's a big conspiracy and that this is actually the case and they're manipulating it, but if they could... Where would they want him to go?
I mean, to me, this is the most fascinating question entering this draft lottery and the NHL draft in general. You know, I'd love to crawl inside Gary Bettman's head and, you know where he would love to see Connor McDavid land. Because, I mean, this is a generational player. This is a guy that, you know, you just can't have land anywhere. He could have a massive impact on the future of this league. I think it's a no-brainer. I think in Arizona or Buffalo, I think that's where Gary Bettman wants Connor McDavid. That's where the NHL is most, you know, healthiest, is with having him land in one of those two American spots.
Excuse me, I just did a spit take there. the place that Connor McDavid should go for the health of this league is the Toronto Maple Leafs, hands down.
That's
no
crazy.
Questions asked.
It's crazy.
Leagues are better off when their flagship franchises are better off. If Connor McDavid ends up in like Carolina in the desert, that will just be a tragedy for this league.
You need the
Leafs are the Yankees, the Man United, the, you know, Barcelona of the NHL. They need to be healthy. They need to be not only they need to be a top team with top players. And they haven't had one arguably since like Dave Keon, for God's sakes. I mean, it's ridiculous around here. And for the league to be healthiest, the Leafs need to be healthy as well.
But you can argue that Dylan Strome is a talented player, and this market would, you know, love seeing a player like that dressing in blue and white. Connor McDavid is, you know, these players don't come around very often. This is Mario Lemieux in 1984. This is possibly, you know, franchise saving for the Coyotes. And I feel like if he lands in Arizona, it's good on two levels. It's a win-win. either you bring fans to the arena, people are interested in the team, they have a good TV deal in the States, or if they need to relocate, that franchise value shoots through the roof.
But does anybody really think that any one player is franchise saving for a Coyotes franchise that should have already moved if the NHL was going to move it?
No, not necessarily. I mean, I'm more in the ball, you know, I'm in the latter. I'm like, if Quebec City all of a sudden wants to buy a franchise, well, that Coyotes team that you wanted to buy for $262 million a few years ago all of a sudden is worth double that, if not more.
No way. They're not leaving Arizona because they don't want a black hole in terms of TV coverage for the league. Quebec will get a franchise if there's an expansion franchise available, but they would have left Arizona already. I mean, this franchise has been on tenterhooks for a long time, for years now, and they've been pushing money into it. They've been trying to find owners. They want to succeed there because they don't want to have a black hole with no TV.
So if that's the case, don't they need Connor McDavid?
No, I think they need Austin Matthews, who will be the best player in the draft next year, was born and raised in Scottsdale. By the numbers looking at it this year, I mean, he's better than Jack Eichel. Not sure that that's going to be the case, but, you know, when you look at his numbers for the U.S. National Development Team, Austin Matthews could be the kind of local savior that the Coyotes need.
See, but that's too much of a risk. You know, a year ago, Jack Eichel was as good as Connor McDavid, and that hasn't necessarily panned out. So if you're the NHL, Connor McDavid is a slam dunk.
Yeah. I mean, there's if Jack Eichel doesn't turn into a franchise changer, I mean, we'll be surprised. Will we be shocked? I don't know if that's the case. We will be absolutely floored if Connor McDavid doesn't change the fortunes of a franchise.
But if I'm the NHL, though, like, I don't care as much about the Arizona Coyotes as I do about the Toronto Maple Leafs and their fortunes, which is why I want Connor McDavid in Toronto.
It's always
going to
be
Chicago,
there.
Or in Chicago or Boston or the Rangers or Detroit or even L.A.
They're going to fill the barn at the Air Canada Center no matter what.
No, but that's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about the way that, you know, the league is perceived. When your flagship franchise sucks, it's not good for your league. Like,
they've been doing fine the last 50 years.
Yes, but this is a different league now. They're trying to create a global brand for themselves. And the Toronto Maple Leafs are the number one draw outside, like on the road, right? And
by Canadians. Not in the United States, do the Toronto Maple Leafs have cachet? Like, do you?
Well, sure.
If you pull,
that's why everywhere
casual,
they go, there are Leaf sweaters.
No, it's because there's snowbirds in Florida who go down watch them play the Panthers.
In Florida and Arizona, I agree with that argument. But there are Leafs fans all over the
Americans
world.
Americans growing up as Leaf fans who didn't live in Canada. You believe that? Like, I believe that with the Yankees. There are Yankee fans across the world, across North America. You can grow up in Halifax and you're a Yankee fan.
I
don't know if there are Maple Leaf fans who grew up in New Jersey.
What I believe is that the NHL is a better place if there are Leafs fans growing up all around North America and all around the world. And to do that, they need a player like Connor McDavid, and that will make the league better off than if he ends up in Arizona or Carolina.
The one area where the NHL can't, like, you know, cash in with Connor McDavid in Toronto is the TV deal. I mean, they've already signed that deal
right
in Canada, north of the border. Mind you, people in this building would love to see Connor McDavid in Toronto. I'm sure that would
maybe
certainly help
pressure
boost Hockey Night in Canada numbers, no doubt. And you know what? As a hockey fan in this market, I would love, the ideal scenario for me would be Connor McDavid in Toronto and Jack Eichel in Buffalo. Because not only would the Buffalo Sabres be bitter at losing that draft lottery to the Toronto Maple Leafs, but then you have a very serious rivalry. You got,
yes,
the American kid in Buffalo, Connor McDavid, the local boy in Toronto. You have 10 to 15 years of fan. That's the NHL's bird versus magic right there.
Can you imagine the hue and cry if the Maple Leafs win the draft lottery? If it's anybody other than the Sabres, there's going to be discussion. Oh, the fix was in, right? Like, there's going to be an argument to be made for whatever team. If it is the Coyotes, oh, of course, the league wants to prop up a team that loses money year after year. If it's Carolina, same deal. They want to rejuvenate a franchise that's hit hard times. But I feel like the Maple Leafs, maybe more than any other team in the Connor McDavid sweepstakes, if they win, fans outside of Toronto will look at this and say, the fix was in. They fixed it for the Maple Leafs.
They will. There will always be those people on Twitter and whatnot. There might also be a large contingent of people who are happy because the two teams that tanked this year didn't end up with Connor McDavid.
That's a good point.
You know, so it goes to show that tanking doesn't always win. But you know, there will always be people who are conspiracy theorists for sure.
When we come back, Tiger Woods will play at Augusta next weekend. How will he do? Hard to say. He's had success there before, but apparently not so great in his practice round, 74, with a whole bunch of crappy chips. That's been his issue recently. We'll talk about that. Plenty more coming up next. This is Sportsnet Magazine Live. I'm Ben Ennis alongside John Gregg and Gary Mello. This is the Sportsnet Radio Network.
With a taste of what's inside the current issue of Sportsnet Magazine, here's Ainsley Doty.
Imagine what it would feel like to be buried alive.
Six boys and one girl were killed during a high school ski trip, swept to their deaths by a massive avalanche.
The darkness, the panic, the slow suffocation. Imagine it. Will Johnson doesn't have to. He lived it. That's because 12 years ago, Johnson survived one of the deadliest avalanches in Canadian history. In 2003, he was 15 years old when he set out on a backcountry ski trip with his high school outdoor education class.
The tragedy quickly became a wake-up call about backcountry travel and safety. The school made changes to its outdoor education program, and the deaths also had an impact on Parks Canada.
It was just another beautiful day in the Rockies until a massive slide came barreling down from Mount Cheops, swallowing everything in its path.
It was an unimaginable tragedy.
Seven of Johnson's classmates were killed. None of the survivors have spoken publicly about that day until now. Will Johnson breaks the silence to talk about the avalanche and the years he spent dealing with the tragedy.
This story and more appears in the latest edition of Sportsnet Magazine, available on Next Issue and in the Apple Newsstand.
Sportsnet Magazine live on the Sportsnet Radio Network. I'm Ben Ennis alongside John Gregg and Gary Mello.
Good tunes back there today. Mid-90s hip-hop is
Emil's
where it's
doing a good job today.
Yeah.
It's rarity. We did a good job today. so in a week, we will be turning our attention. First of all, a week from now, from today, is like the best sports time of the year, in my opinion. Because you got the Masters. You've got the playoffs right around the corner in both the NHL and the NBA. Baseball is into its first couple of weeks for me, and you got March Madness wrapping up as well. That is the best time to be a sports fan.
I like it because that's when Gary and I get our most time off. Like when the NHL playoffs start, that's when we're home and cooled out, right? There's nothing to do at work all day.
Is that true?
No, that's not true.
That seems not true at all.
No.
Seems the opposite.
When the
of true.
Stanley Cup playoffs begin is when we really begin.
Yeah, you guys have been playing possum up until next week. All right, so the Masters start a week from Thursday. Tiger Woods will be there. I love kind of like the cloak and dagger stuff that's happened the last week where there's reports of his plane arriving at Augusta Airport. He played practice rounds, but nobody actually saw the man. I mean, you know how much media was surrounding that airplane? Nobody actually was able to snap a photo of Tiger Woods. The guy's incredible. He's a superhero. So he will play. Apparently shot a 74 in this practice round that we're getting reports of that there was no picture of. But he will play. I'm a golf fan, so I'm going to watch the Masters no matter what. But still, Gary, I'm excited that Tiger Woods is going to play in this thing.
Well, you know, as a casual golf fan, this is what it takes to get someone like me to tune in.
Yeah.
Is you put that marquee name there. I want to see Tiger Woods at this tournament because either way, whether or not he's in the running or it's a complete train wreck, I want to watch it.
What do you prefer, John? What would you rather see? Tiger Woods great getting back to competing for a green jacket or fall flat on his face?
In the running for sure. I'm a big fan. I've been lucky enough to be old enough, I guess, to have seen guys.
So lucky to be old.
You know, I've seen Wayne Gretzky. I've seen Mario Lemieux. I've seen Michael Jordan. I've seen Nolan Ryan. And I've seen Tiger Woods. You know, I've seen Jack Nicklaus win a major. I think it's great when...
You saw Secretariat.
Yeah.
How old are you?
I think it's great when you get to be witness to great players. And I think there'd be nothing better than for Tiger Woods to come back and be great again. And to contend at majors and maybe even win another one. And if he's going to, this is a good place to start. You know, when Bernard Langer and Fred Couples can be on the first page of the leaderboard year after year, you know, so can Tiger. I mean, it's all about course knowledge when it comes to the Masters.
It's it was kind of interesting to see Hank Haney, his former swing coach, tweet about the fact that in 2010, Tiger didn't break 80 twice in practice rounds before Augusta and then went into that tournament, finished fourth. So I don't know if the 74 isn't that big a deal for Tiger, although last time we saw him out, he was wincing. Somebody else had to pick up his tee, and he was sculling chips over the green. So
he has looked really bad this season. I mean, he's doing things out there that, like, I do.
Oh, yeah.
You know, he's flubbing chips from 20 yards and stuff, like, and over again. It's amazing, really, how bad he was.
I've watched Greg play. I can confirm that.
Well, I tweeted out that, oh, Tiger's afraid of being embarrassed out there. Well, welcome to 99% of the golfers in the world. Yeah, I'm always afraid of embarrassing myself out there, especially on the first tee when everybody's watching you.
Yeah.
That's no good. Also, today, breaking in the last couple of days, Josh Hamilton will not be suspended by the Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim. He admitted to having a relapse during the offseason, and there was some arbitration. Eventually, the arbitrator ruling that Major League Baseball cannot suspend him because he didn't test positive for anything. And we don't know whether it was drugs, whether it was alcohol, what kind of drug it was, whatever. But I think the news aspect of this and the part of it that kind of adds to the debate is the handling of this by the Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim, California world.
Disney.
They have come out and said, we can't believe he wasn't suspended. They wanted him suspended. And that's fine to secretly, behind the scenes. We know the Yankees wanted A-Rod suspended. They didn't even come out and say, we wanted him suspended. The Angels, for a known drug abuser, they know he had a drug problem when they signed with that massive deal. To come out and say what they've said, Gary, is kind of shocking.
I mean, it was a pretty classless thing to do. I mean, you want to encourage, you know, here we are living in a society now where we want to encourage people to talk about their addiction and their mental health. And here's someone who's seeking help, who's trying, you know, he's leaning on the resources he has in order to get help and overcome his personal demons. And they're totally discouraging that by coming out and saying that. You know, I think it's more of a buyer's remorse in their situation where they're probably trying to look to get off the hook of the $83 million left on his contract.
All dollars.
Totally. Like, it's just icky, right? Like, it makes you feel uncomfortable that his team would not support him when he's trying to do the right thing and battle this disease. And this, you know, on the same day when Irvin Santana gets busted for steroids and, you know, he's going to miss the first half of the season. I think people who come forward and admit their faults and admit their problems should be heralded as heroes, really. The things he's gone through to get to where he is in his career are amazing. And people should be proud to that he comes out and does this.
Could be an awkward return to action for Josh when he does get back into the
lineup.
You know
his teammates will have his back, even if his ownership and GM doesn't.
Yeah, that should be May, June-ish is when they think Josh will be ready to return to action. Thanks a lot, gents. I guess you got to get back to work because, you know, playoffs are around the corner.
Playoffs are coming.
Yep. Thanks. Really enjoyed it. Coming up next, I'll get you ready for the Blue Jays and Reds Game 2 in Montreal. We'll talk to Mike Wilner coming up in just a few minutes before we get you set for the broadcast at 12:30. This has been Sportsnet Magazine Live with John Gregg and Gary Mello. I'm Ben Ennis on the Sportsnet Radio Network.